I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. This week, I'm going to be talking to Pierre Muller, who is the RFID business unit manager at EM Microelectronics. It's going to be a dive into the world of Auto ID, RAIN, RFID, and an opportunity to get to know a really interesting company, EM Microelectronic, part of the Swatch group. So they started off making the chips for watches and now have a significant place generating or designing the chips that go into RFID tags. So Pierre is on the board of directors of RAIN, the industry organization that presides over and basically cultivates the standards and the application of UHF RFID. We've actually had the leader of RAIN, the chief executive of RAIN, on the podcast. You can dig through the archives for that. But Pierre is really knowledgeable, and so we get him to position and talk about where RAIN is relevant. He's also a contributor to the ISO standards, he's gone from one Swiss company, semiconductor company, to another. He's started his career off at ST Microelectronics. So I learned a lot from talking to him. The conversation's in a bit of a noisy environment. So we had had our session at the AIPIA conference, the Active Intelligent Packaging Association. They meet every year around about this time, November, in Amsterdam. And it's just an amazing show. It's a bit of an insider's show. But if you want to talk to the insiders in this industry, it's a great place to go. They do a super job of organizing it. So hopefully you can put up with a bit of background noise. Aaron, our wizard of the editing suite, has done his best to wipe the distracting noises out. Hope you enjoy this interview.
The Mr. Beacon Ambient IoT podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, bringing intelligence to every single thing.
So Pierre, thanks very much for coming on to the Mr. Beacon podcast.
Thank you for inviting me here.
Well, we're in Amsterdam, which is pretty cool, at this beautiful old historic building. It used to be the Stock Exchange, I believe, and it's the AIPIA show. I spell it out, but some people just kind of abbreviate it. But basically, it's a smart packaging show. What is why are you here? What's the driver for EM Microelectronics, where you work, being at this show?
So EM Microelectronics is a company part of the Swatch Group based in Switzerland. And inside this company, we are doing much more than just, we're doing semiconductor, but we are doing more than just watch semiconductor.
But you do make, I assume that EM Micro makes chips that go in
the Swatch watches?
Sure. That's the reason why we exist.
Right. And was that like an acquisition? Did Swatch decide, we need chips, we're going to buy a chip company? Or did it sort of grow organically from within
the... No, that's an acquisition, but that's happened, I think, 40 years back.
Wow.
So I think EM Micro was founded in 75, if I'm correct, and acquisition is in the early 80s.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So Swatch buys a company to make the chips and the watches. And I used to be a huge collector of Swatch watches before I got my Apple Watch, which really killed a lot of the fun in collecting watches. Now you can just collect bands. But I assume that this business has grown into something pretty significant. You're a major player in the RFID ecosystem. So maybe you can tell us a bit about what are the products that EM Micro sells into RFID?
So EM Micro has been in the RFID since the early days of RFID, more than 30 years ago, and has pioneered many of the standards, whether for low frequency or NFC or UHF. We even deliver UHF chip before the UHF standard was existing. And we've been part of the first mass deployment with Marks & Spencer in 2005 for UHF RFID. So it's really part of the DNA of EM to be an innovator and to try to differentiate from competition. Being a Swiss company, we need to have this kind of positioning where we can provide added value to our customer. And with this long legacy of products, we are one of the few actors in RFID that are present in the different segments and that can offer the IC for the different frequency band, low frequency, NFC, UHF.
And what is UHF is the RAIN RFID, yep, the RFID tags that you find on apparel in the hang labels and so forth. And those are the tags that are used with these big scanners where you want to track
exactly
inventory. NFC is where you're tapping.
Exactly. That's the customer interaction. NFC is the technology you're using when you tap to pay with your smartphone that's also used typically in Europe, in the ski resort. There is a lot of the access, what we call access control, but that's basically your ski pass will be NFC technology. And when you're moving through the gates, that's NFC gates that are on the ski resort.
And so you're going through the ski resorts. Are you tapping the pass onto a reader, or is it just reading at distance?
No, it's reading at a distance. There you have a significant size antenna, and it's reading. You basically have your ski pass directly on your clothes and in a pocket, and you can just go through.
That is interesting because obviously I live in the United States, so I see NFC through the lens of the US, where for the longest time, you know, NFC was kind of big in Europe,
yep,
and it was nowhere in the US. It was nowhere in payments. It was nowhere in terms of tags. Now, I think here in the States, we have learned that you tap to pay, but the range is very short.
Yep. So in the NFC, in fact, we called HF but it's very technology oriented because that's really what qualifies the radio band that you're using.
So what is the band that high frequency HF is what's used with near field communications,
exactly,
NFC for both payments and for the stickers.
Yep.
And I interrupted you, so I just wanted to carry on with what you were going to say.
Yeah, so this frequency is 13.5 megahertz, and the same frequency is used whether you're using what we call some kind of HF reader, which are industrial reader that can read at a distance, like 1 meter, that's typically used on the ski pass, and the antenna might be, the antenna will be larger for the tag so that you got a good read range. NFC is really coming with the smartphone. It's reusing the standard that was already existing prior to that, and is really much more focused on the short-term distance because it has been driven by the payment industry, where the shorter distance is also a way to keep privacy.
Yes.
And also by the simple fact that your smartphone is limited in terms of energy and you don't want to overspend the energy trying to read things at a long distance.
So the NFC tag, and also there's NFC tags in credit cards, right?
Yes.
In some credit cards. So where you tap to pay, that's using NFC as well.
Yes, yes. It's the same technology for communications.
And can that be read at a distance? So, you know, I see people with the RF sleeves, the metallic sleeves, because they don't want someone to scan their credit cards from a distance. Is there anything to that?
Well, there's a lot there, I would say, in terms of attack and people trying to set up some engineering setup to read at a distance. And you can find some literature where they succeed, but in fact, it's still very, very unlikely to be able to read more than a few tenths of a centimeter. But, the payment industry is very focused on that and making sure that there's little you can do with that. So I would say it's a potential concern as soon as you put data on the air, but you can also protect the data by cryptographic means and whatever. So if you want to use one of those wallets that are protecting, I think that's fairly easy. You can also use an aluminium foil and that's over.
Same thing.
So just doing the same. So it's quite easy. And I would say I don't think it's the real concern there.
So why use NFC on a ski pass as opposed to, say, UHF, which is more designed for longer range reading?
So there is a bit of legacy there in the development of the technology, but there is one key difference between the two technologies that NFC is has been built to singulate an item. So you can manage several items, but at the heart, it's a point-to-point communication system where you have a reader and one item communicating together.
So it's one-to-one?
It's a one-to-one, in essence. UHF is very different because UHF has been built so that a reader can try to inventory as many tags as possible in a split second. And where it comes to very practical differences in implementation is that it's that with UHF you would have much more cross reading between the lane. So if several persons are passing through different lanes, then UHF would have a hard time to singulate only specific lanes, where it will be much more easy much easier with the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Often people talk to us, Williot, got my day job hat on, about the sort of the tap use case. And they say, oh, you could use Bluetooth, your tags for a tap. And I always kind of discourage them because I actually think if you want a tap experience, the NFC is really the best approach. The response is going to be very, very fast, whereas Bluetooth, I mean, it can be pretty quick, but you're never going to get that super responsive tap. Is that a fair comment?
I think so, yes. And we even have some use case where we've built some modules with BLE and NFC together, where the NFC is used for pairing the BLE with the smartphone or for doing the first connection. So I think the two technologies are really complementary, and sometimes it's really misused trying to use one for doing the job of the others. Sometimes it works, sometimes that's really not the best way to approach a problem.
So we've talked about NFC for payments, and we've talked about it for secure authentication. Yes, you've paid the 100 euros for your ski pass or whatever it is. NFC can also be used for non-secure auto ID as well, can't it? Like you can have tags on a map and people can tap on a map. Is that a different protocol, or is it the same protocol?
It's basically the same thing. What will be different is the type of tag that is used. Obviously, your credit card is much more secure and robust than the tag that you want cheap and easy if you're just interacting with a product or trying to get some information there.
Okay.
But the basic communication is really the same. I would say that one of the key advantages of the NFC technology for the tab and with the tag is that the tag can pass what we call an NDEF message, which is basically a message that's given to the smartphone, but the smartphone will not do anything with that. It will just pass on to the server. And it's a very nice way to use the smartphone as a reader or a gateway without needing any app or anything. And you can connect and go directly to the server. So you could put all the intelligence, all the brain on the server, and you don't need to do that in an app. So
that's interesting. Okay, so this is helpful, getting a sense of how these technologies relate to each other. And so the stickers, the NFC stickers, they don't have a secure environment on them. They're low cost, and they just maybe have a URL encoded or something like that.
I would say in terms of security, it's depending a lot on, well, there is a lot of type of security or different aspect. Credit card security is one thing, because then there the credential, the card itself need to be protected, otherwise people could gain access to your bank account. In the case of NFC tag, we'll find security in some of them for authenticating a product, for instance, and with some crypto, that is, I would say, simpler than what we are doing for banking, but it's still very robust and very good. Then the question when you're discussing about security is, what are you really protecting? What are the assets you're trying to protect? And how much people that would try to attack your solution will gain by breaking one tag, for instance. And usually with the NFC, let's say people could gain access to maybe one product, but then they don't have access to the second product. They will need to reproduce the attack, so that like the gain compared to the effort is small. In the banking world, then of course, if they gain access to some bank account, then the potential upside is quite significant. So
very significant. Okay, so that's helpful. I think I understand more about high frequency than I did before. Where does low frequency fit into this? What are the applications for that?
Low frequency is historically has been and is still very much used for animal identification. And the first deployment we've done, well, 30 years ago, was for pigeon racing. Because as soon as you're doing some racing, it seems people are cheating some way or another.
Even with pigeons.
And so Animal ID is the biggest deployment. There is also a lot of access control that are existing, but I would say that's more legacy business that is moving slowly to NFC type of business. Animal ID is there to stay, and for some simple reason is that the higher the frequency band, the more it tends to be absorbed by humidity and by water. And
okay,
the body is a lot of water. So it's very difficult to achieve robust identifications with NFC or UHF if you get some injectable type of product. And well, nowadays, for instance, in Europe, almost all the pets need to have a glass tube with their ID, so that the vet can check the ID of the pet. And
okay,
there is
so if I have my dog chipped, for instance, or my cat, I remember we had a cat, it disappeared for a year, someone brought it back, and we'd had a chip put into it, and so they were able to identify it. So that was probably a low frequency.
Yes,
tag.
Yes, I'm quite sure that was
okay.
Low frequency, and there is a fair chance it was from EM.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much for reuniting our cat. It was kind of embarrassing. We got rid of all of the cat bowl and that sort of thing, and then Yogi was back with us for another 10 years, so we had to buy a whole bunch of stuff. But it was worth it, and thank you for making that work. So that's so let's talk about EM and your division. Those are quite a few markets, and I assume you're competing with companies like NXP, who also make the chips. Where are your strengths? Where do you try and focus?
So, yeah, definitely NXP is one of the large provider in that field, and one that covering the different market segments. As EM, we are really focusing on innovation, trying to be very nimble and agile in the different pilots that we're doing, being very close to the customer. And we are also very, we try to be, to drive really innovations there and have differentiation. So I would say, for instance, we have a large similitude in the portfolio between NXP and EM, but one chip that they are not coming with is the dual frequency, combining UHF, RAIN, RFID together with NFC and to enable some new use case. So that would be one way we are differentiating by providing different products.
And why would I want a chip that can do NFC and UHF? Well, what are the applications where that has really struck a chord?
So we discussed a bit about NFC, UHF, or RAIN RFID, because both names are used, is a lot about supply chain management, logistic management. It's very much used into retail space and growing a lot, especially past years with Walmart announcing that they want to deploy it on all their product and really acting on that. And the technology are very different, as we discussed, and they have different strengths. What we recognize that there is not one technology that's solving every issue, and we come up with the realization that combining them together would provide additional value. So if you think about the supply chain management and retail, so UHF will enable to manage all the logistic to the store, the inventory in the store. But after the point of sales, then UHF is no longer used and the customer cannot interact with that. And the infrastructure for UHF is probably the weakest point, mm-hmm. because it's requiring to have specific reader installed, and that's a bit expensive and requiring infrastructure. On the opposite, NFC, as we've seen, everybody's having a reader in the pocket with the smartphone, and so can easily interact with NFC tag, which is the big strength of the NFC. And combining them together, basically, we are enabling to have a unique identifier for a product, and people can interact with the product through the NFC interface, but the company can also have all the use the UHF for the logistic. There is only one chip to maintain, one ID to maintain, one chip to encode, to assemble, to manufacture, and it's really going through the whole chain up to the customer, and the customer can check that. And then you're enabling a lot of new use cases, like for instance, brand protection and anti-counterfeiting, or customer engagement, or circularity, basically. So,
and maybe returns as well?
Yes, that's things. Well, and when you think about returns, there are a number of things. But in some case, returns, I would say, if you want to handle return, it's almost as important for the brand to know that the product that they are getting back is authentic.
Yes.
And it was for the customer in the first place.
Yes.
And we got some customers saying, yeah, people are buying online. They receive the product. They have 7 days to make their mind about the product. They ship the product back, and the product they ship back is fake. So it's a big issue also for some of the brands.
I never even thought about that. But yeah, what a great scam. You buy expensive products, you send cheap counterfeits back, and you can then sell the real thing on the black market.
Exactly. So that's the kind of brand protection capability that we can add on top of, well, that's really driving today the dual frequency product that we're providing, and the capability to interact with the product, to know it's authentic. And there, as I mentioned, there's a very good crypto algorithm that will certify that the tag you have and the product associated to it is authentic.
And I think that also the resale market, the circularity use cases, I think are very interesting. I was talking to the folks at Ralph Lauren the other day, and they pointed out that on their app, they are facilitating the resale of their products, which is great for the environment. And I think it helps build the value of their brand. And I mean, I think clothing can last a lifetime. Fast fashion, I think, is getting a bad name.
Yeah.
And also, if they're facilitating the resale of their product, then they can actually monetize it, so they can get revenue from the first sale and revenue from the second sale as well.
Exactly, that's really enabled new business case, and it's not only Ralph Lauren. That's also, for instance, H&M. If you go to their website, they are very, very strong on circularity, and they want to grow. I think they want to double their revenue, and they know they cannot do that, and they want to halve their footprint in terms of CO2. So they cannot do that at the same time by selling more product. Mm-hmm. So the whole strategy is about reselling or selling multiple times by recycling, really getting the items through the cycle several times.
And I guess if you're buying a secondhand product, then as a consumer, one of the reasons you wouldn't do that is a trust issue. You know, if I buy from Macy's or from the Ralph Lauren store, I'm pretty sure that this is the genuine article. But if I'm buying it from someone on eBay or some other channel, then I don't trust it as much. And so if I have NFC, and I actually don't think Ralph Lauren are using NFC. I think they're just using a serialized QR code, which is better than nothing. Yeah. But it seems like if you're using something that's got encryption, then you can be even more sure that this is the real thing.
Yeah, so I think circularity will be a lot about trust, and the mm-hmm. trust you can have in the brand and the trust you can have into the product. And if you want, yeah, as you mentioned, secondhand market is very, very important that you know what you're buying and you know the product is authentic. So I think we will also see a trend where the tag will be more and more integrated into the product. And a lot of people today are looking into integrating the tag directly into the textile compared to the care label or the end tag that are just removed past the point of sales. Typically, people will cut the care labels, where you lose the traceability for the product. And that's getting more and more problems, especially with European regulation and digital product passport, which is mandating that you can follow the product through the for its complete life cycles, enabling the sorting, the recycling, or a second life for the product. And so that's a big regulation trend. I think that's also finding root into the push for circularity and sustainability.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So what is, I love this use case. What is the uptake like? Where are you seeing volume? Where are you seeing the ramp up of volume? What are the kinds of products where this is being done?
So the driver today is clearly into the high-value items, whether you're talking luxury or high-end retails or accessories in the retail space.
So handbags and...
Yeah, typically, yes. And where you have a lot of counterfeits, the added value of the product is really helping with having a tag, which is more expensive than a QR code. I think a lot of the technology are... unfortunately, more expensive than QR code.
Yes.
And luxury and everything that's also getting into being very much counterfeit. So I would say, well, spirit as well. Spirit is another driver where you know there's a lot of counterfeit into the iron spirit. And I think the next driver with the will be going on to customer engagement as well and customer interaction.
Now, that seems to be the area where there's been really poor performance, the customer engagement. But I think the authentication piece could be a great way into that because, you know, part of this is training us as the public to use this. And I think in the States, we didn't have tap payments for so long that no one was used to tapping anything. Yeah. Now we're used to tapping to pay, then I think it's a smaller step to tap onto products. And I can imagine if I'm paying, $100 or $1,000 for a bottle of spirit, then I might be more motivated to think and engage in a more elaborate scheme to authenticate that this is the real thing. Have you seen any, do you have any success stories in that? Because we're at the Active Intelligent Packaging Industry Association. And I was looking at, I won't mention whose booth it is, but they had a bottle of wine with a NFC tag in it. And I'm like, no one is going to be tapping this bottle of wine because the NFC tag was under a label and there was no visual indication of where you would tap. So, you know, the first problem is, okay, I have to tap the bottle of wine. Where on this wine do I tap? And at what point do I get so embarrassed because people are looking and nothing's working that I'm never, ever going to do that again? And it seems like you need, you know, a branding campaign, logos and tap here type thing. I haven't seen that yet.
No, that's definitely true. And that's one of the topic in the NFC forum, especially for the interactions to have a clear guidelines. And I think the brand that are doing it most correctly are really understanding that there is a marketing campaigns to be done and there are some educations.
The problem is that the people that design the labels don't necessarily want to have a big logo on it with a picture of a phone. You've got this beautiful bottle of champagne. It's all about the method and the, you know, I don't need to tell you. And then you're like bringing technology into it.
Yeah.
And you're like bursting the bubble.
So, no, it don't need to be that obvious or that, but it needs
it can
be
tasteful, subtle.
Yeah. For instance, in the spirits, clearly the biggest trend is to get it into the cap, into the bottle. And this is also preventing from the refill for the spirit. So it's also protecting from counterfeit.
So it's tamper detection as well.
Yes. That's something that we can easily do either with the NFC or the UHF interface. And we have been very successful with the deployment of the dual frequency in China with very high brand spirits that were really facing counterfeiting issues there.
I've definitely come across that myself, where there was a major cognac brand that was very interested in massive issue with counterfeit. And I mean, that's the thing about counterfeit is you're losing the revenue from the sale, but you're also destroying the brand because the product probably isn't as good.
Yes. Counterfeit is destroying the trust that you have into the brand, which is the worst thing that can happen. So why would you pay $200 for a bottle if you don't even drink the right spirit there? So
not only are you having an inferior product, but also you are destroying the exclusivity. If you have poor people wearing a Chanel product, then it's like the whole point that presumably people are spending thousands of dollars is that they can say, I'm rich, you're not.
And, exactly, yes. So that's a major concern for the brand.
Okay, so this is a good marriage between technology and business. Are there any examples that you've described some of the use case, the wine bottle cap and so forth. Are there any brands that are public that are doing this?
So one that is a lot of the brands are keeping that for themselves, I would say at the moment, or don't want to communicate on the technology per se. But one we can mention is Moose Knuckles. was a famous Canadian brand doing high-end cloth for winter cloth, and they are using our technology for brand protection and product authentications since a few years already and very successfully.
And it seems like after sales care as well, you know, understanding how to use the product, because I don't think very few people keep the manual, even for like a washing machine. So am I going to keep the manual for my goose down insulated jacket? Probably not. But then when it comes to clean it or whatever, then, you know, I'm out of luck.
Yeah. And in fact, it's one of the things that the sky is the limit in terms of what you can do to interact with the product, because the product itself is, the tag itself is just giving you a link between your smartphone and the brand web page, basically. And there, the story that can be displayed there is really, well, unique to the brand, but it can also be customized with time. Just to take a few examples, if you're a big fan in sports, you can buy and let's say your favorite teams invest in that. Mm-hmm. You can tap it, make sure it's mm-hmm. authentic. The mm-hmm. product is authentic, but then you could tap it again and got the next game. When is the next game? What was the last score? Whatever, because you can be redirected live to the website and get this kind of interaction. So it's really enabling a lot of digital use case. We hear a lot about digitalization, Mark going big in digitalizations, but it's also about interacting with their product and connecting with that. Can take some other example of new use case that are enabled. It's like if you're, we talk a bit about sports and I'm running a lot and things is, okay, I want to buy the next, my new pair of shoes because they just wear off. And if I'm going to Foot Lockers or one of the distributors there, well, maybe I was having a pair of Nike and they will advise me to go for Adidas or for ASICS. So basically the retailer where you are going is owning the relationship to the customer. But if basically, usually I don't want even to go to the shop. I would like, you know, just the same one. It was good. I just want the same one. I just want to reorder. And sometimes the same is not existing any longer because they changed the brand. But if I can tap just to reorder, then I'm going to the website of the brand. And based on my previous purchase, they can tell me, oh, this one is no longer existing, but you should consider this model because that will be the perfect fit for you. So the brand is owning the relationship to the end user and not leaving it to the distributor or the retailer.
Yeah, so retention, loyalty, follow-on sales. That's true. I have some beloved Vans shoes, and I'm like, you're wearing out. I know they don't have any more of this kind. What can I buy next? So if I knew that I could just tap, and then I wouldn't even have to go into the store, which I don't really enjoy doing, probably I'm not going to get particularly good advice from the teenager that's working there. If I could get a really good digital experience, I think I would. What are you seeing in terms of the software behind that? Because it's all very well, you know, you've provided this amazing data carrier, the chip and the interface. But then I think about, well, I want a great software experience that's going to be maintained for years to come. So it seems like there needs to be a discipline of digital product management inside the retailer, and presumably they need the software tools to manage all of this.
Yeah, so I think software is coming in different aspects. I think the retailer are a lot focusing on the software. They need to manage their shops on the one side, all the infrastructure and so on, which is very important when it comes to inventory management, and that's also a huge differentiator for the sales. But it's also come with there's also the part of the user experience. And this one, I would tend to say it's probably a lot easier because the tag itself, an NFC tag, is giving you just a link to a website, which arguably any teenager know to do right mm-hmm. now. You have a bit more complexity maybe if you go to security because you want to do a bit of crypto, but that's really not something very very difficult in terms of software development. So I would say what the brand really need now is the marketing people to understand the value of the technology and leverage it. In the past, it used to be the infrastructure people, the ICT, the IT guys, the manufacturing guys that were pushing the solution as a way to optimize the cost and to reduce the cost. But now with this kind of solutions, it has to come also from customer engagement, from the marketing department, and people that are usually maybe a bit farther away from the technology. And this is where we have to bridge the gap, I would say, and that get people understand the capability and then build on it and develop it. But I've seen really a number of solutions out there that working great. And I would say that this software part is not the big issue for this kind of deployment. Arguably, getting the right tag, getting it nicely integrated into your product and people understanding how to use it or to interact with the product is, in my opinion, the highest hurdle that we have to face.
But do you have relationships with the serialization software platform vendors, the Keslers, the Avery Dennison Atma.io, I think Identiv now have Bitly, and then of course Digimarc has everything.
Yes.
Do you work with those?
Definitely. I think we work with many, if not almost all of them. Mm-hmm. And the tag itself is very agnostic to that. It needs to be built on standard and on standard identification code. And then the company you just name are really a very good partner to do any deployment. But there are some others. I think it's really about probably depending on the segment, I would say each of them is having some specialty and will be really maybe the better partner. But I would not be able to give you the preferred partner. It will depend on your product and on your segment. And But if you contact us, we are happy to have the discussion.
That's very good. Another area I wanted to pick your brain. So you're seems like an active member of the RAIN Alliance. Is that true?
I'm part of the board of the RAIN Alliance. So
okay,
active,
I'd love to hear what's happening with that group. What are the priorities for RAIN these days?
I would say one of the priority of RAIN is really handling the growth that there is at the moment in the RAIN markets. There is really an exponential growth. RAIN RFID has been a very interesting technology, but almost, I would say, for years, but now it's really taking off in huge volume. There has been 34 billion tag sales last year, mm-hmm. and it's just a small part of the potential market. And this is coming with deployment at Walmart that has been it's pushing a lot of tag in the market, but also UPS for the logistic and some of their counterparts.
So what is UPS using RAIN RFID for?
For packet tracking. So to automatize all the packet, medium-sized packet tracking in the US and converting a lot of their supply chain. So there we are really in the art of what RAIN RFID is doing best, which is inventory, supply chain management and very quick, very fast inventory management.
Very good. So RAIN is presiding over some success. What are the... So everything's going great. Presumably you've got nothing to do, or is there something to do?
There is a lot to do. There is a lot to do. The key objective for the RAIN Alliance is to lower the barrier to adoptions and to make the technology easier to adapt and to deploy. And I think the infrastructure is still one of the barrier there, and we are trying to make that easier for everybody. Other concern is the sustainability and the how RAIN RFID can really help with sustainability and reduce the footprint, but also as a technology, we want to avoid to contribute to any waste, any kind of waste. So that. Some of the big concern that we have at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to the Avery Dennison folks at the show, and they were educating me on how the work they're doing to enable the separation of the tag from the material. You have different kinds of packaging and different kinds of tags, and they want to essentially use the right adhesive so that the tag can be separated and the PET bottle can go back and is pure and can be turned into another PET bottle, and then the label can be turned into a park bench or something like that. So I get that. On the cost of the infrastructure, obviously, as Williot, we make a big deal over that, as we have friendly competition with RFID, although I think RFID is, UHF RFID has done a lot to grow the market, and I think it's a matter of having the right tool for the right job. But why is it that the infrastructure is so expensive for RFID? And I know you can get low-cost RFID readers, but it still seems like a handheld scanner is $1,000 and a tunnel is whatever, add another digit onto it. And yet, you know, the radios are just radios. So is it a business model issue? Is it a technology issue? Or
no, I don't think it's a business model issue. I think there are some limitation in the technology and what can be done there. I think also from the reader perspective, I mean, it's a huge market for the tag arguably, it's not that huge market for the reader side of it. And I if see. You think about the smartphone, the one thing that's driving down the volumes for the smartphone is the volumes.
Yes, and the price of the smartphones going down because they sell a billion every year.
And the semiconductor industry is really a volume industry in essence. As you know, the first product is costing you millions, if not tens of millions, to develop.
Yeah.
And the second one is costing you a few cents or a few bucks.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think, part of the problem is maybe coming from there.
Do you make chips that go in readers, or you just make the chips that go in the tags?
We have some reader chip on the low frequency and NFC segments. We are not specializing into the chip reader. Some company are doing that. And I mean, it's a matter of focus. At some points, we're already doing a lot of the tags, and it's also requiring a lot of software support and maintenance that we don't really want to be involved with.
That makes sense. And what about the Bluetooth market? Do you play in there?
We definitely have some BLE
solutions
that we really think it's one of the lower cost and lower footprint, lower power consumptions in the world. And we have great deployment on the Bluetooth.
So you have a hybrid NFC and UHF tag. Have you ever thought about doing a hybrid Bluetooth and RFID, RAIN RFID
tag? Yeah, we're thinking a lot about that. We didn't come yet with specific business case for that, but as mentioned, we got in the past some use case for BLE together with UHF RFID, and we combined some modules to do that. That was some kind of applications where you don't want the BLE to be active before the product is going to the market. So all the shelf life, you want to save your battery. So the use case was really about using RFID to activate the BLE after the point of sales when you really want the BLE to be on.
That's interesting. What I was thinking about was sort of similar. You could have user engagement with BLE, and you could have the inventory with the UHF as well. That would be another use case.
Yes, that's, I think the use cases are really interesting, and they are definitely existing. Now the question is how long it will take for the market to recognize that and to come into it.
Okay, well, maybe we should talk about this some more with the cameras off and the microphones off. But Pierre, this has been a really interesting conversation. Thanks, I really appreciate it.
same thing for me. I really appreciate that, Steve.
So I was intrigued with your career. How long have you been working in this industry?
Well, depend on which industry you're meaning.
Well, you started at ST Micro, didn't you?
I started with ST Micro in 2000. Mm-hmm. So I'm now working in semiconductors since 23 years. And I started really as a designer for cellular platform and Bluetooth type of application. So from that perspective, I'm really interested in the wired solutions.
Yeah.
Then I moved to security and payment type of applications, and I joined into EM Microelectronic and RFID back in 2017.
17, did you say?
Yes, 17, 6 years back, where I drive the technical development with EM Microelectronic. And since a bit more than 2 years now, I'm responsible for the full RFID business unit.
Okay, and what's the scope of your responsibilities? What is the business unit?
So the business unit is responsible for everything related to RFID. So we are doing IC design, low frequency type of product, also NFC and UHF type of product. And we have this unique value proposition with the dual frequency product.
That's cool. So the key questions, the most difficult questions of the interview are the three songs that are like supposedly your favorite songs. I think favorite songs change from 1 minute to another, but what are the three songs that you chose?
So it took me some time to figure out, because I'm not like a super fan of one particular band. I'm not a musician, but the first one would be Mack the Knife from Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
And the key reason there is really I was dancing a lot. That's the way I met my wife, basically. Oh. And the way I'm listening to music a lot of time, all the time, but the way I'm listening to music is more to get into a specific mood or I think the one thing I like is that in a few seconds, music gets you into a specific state of mind and state of being. And yeah, Mack the Knife is for me, well, one of the best memories of my life when I met my wife, basically, and we share a lot on this song.
And where did you meet her?
Dancing in some party and just dancing on this, rocking and swinging.
All right. The old-fashioned way. It seems like now everyone meets online.
Yeah.
There's an algorithm, but the algorithm was basically the music that you liked.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Okay, well, that's a good one. So what's number two?
Number two, and again, that's really getting in the right mood and setup, and that would be Is This Love by Bob Marley. I like to start the day with reggae music or really like good spirit music that just get me on and get started. So, and if I'm thinking about reggae music, then it's Bob.
Very good. So you, like one of these people, if you're going to an important meeting, you'll play music to kind of psych yourself up, to get you in the right state?
I would, I'm not doing too much for meeting, but yes, I would use music to get me in the right state of mind and to prep myself. I think that's really speed things up.
Right.
It's really, the body is answering instantly to music.
That's very true. Okay, and what's number three?
And number three will be In the End from Linkin Park.
Uh-huh.
And that's one music that would get me prepared for sports. Basically, I'm running a lot, doing a lot of sport, and that's kind of getting, all set up for doing any exercise or just get me thrilled, basically.
Yeah, sport and music are closely linked. I had a friend, Adam Riggs-Zygon, who had a whole startup about music for sports, and he would actually he had a device that would measure your heartbeat and regulate the music according to your heartbeat.
That's one of the things I like about music or even DJ for party, when they can get you at a certain orbit and then they can move you around and basically play with your engagement. That's really impressive, the way it goes, music and body together. And
One of the best evenings I've had has been DJing at my son's school when he was little. These are like 10, 11, 12-year-olds, but also the parents. And I volunteered to be the DJ, and I used to be a DJ with the old-fashioned turntables, yeah. But this was with on the iPad with the, doing the same thing. One of the best evenings of my life was seeing all these people dancing and feeling like you'd had some influence on it.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Well, wonderful. Those are great choices. Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming on the show.
Very glad to be here, Steve.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Pierre. It means a lot that you stuck to the end. As I travel around, go to these conferences, I bump into people who subscribe to the show. And whenever I hear that it's been helpful, that means a lot. We can make this show even more helpful if we get your feedback, good, bad, suggestions, whatever. Please put your comments and reviews onto the platforms where you consume this, or send your feedback directly to me at mrbeacon.com. So until next time, be safe. And many thanks to Brooke and Aaron for promoting and editing this episode. And many thanks to you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.